Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're talking to an old friend. It's been a while. I was actually, Martin, you're not even an old friend at this stage. You're more of a hindrance.
I'm just old, and I don't think you should be describing our guest as old. He is in the prime of his prime of his life.
Can I just say before we start, it's now 12:40, and I did say earlier, it's now 20 minutes to time to wake Martin.
And I'm up, you see, you give a dog a bad name. I'm up since the crack of dawn. It's unreal. I saw the sun rise this morning as I went to bed.
No one believes you. Just reminder to listeners, we will be live on, again, we do our live Sunday show. People come along online. We have a great crack, a bit of an audience, and we have a bit of a Q&A, and we go through some of the stories of the week, some of the events. The link will be on this podcast. Just click on the link, register, come along. And if you're not a member, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It's the price for a cup of coffee once a month, and it pays for everything. I think we're now up to, I think it's 10 to 12 podcasts on the platform. And it's looking like we may even have an international edition. So bear with me and I'll let you know as that goes. Anyway, enough patting ourselves on the back. And actually, it's funny I just said that about having that number of podcasts on the Tortoise Shack, because the last time Paddy and we met, I think we were probably still shouting at an iPad. We were joined by Paddy Cullivan, the music voice, historical entertainer, writer. You'd know him from loads of things, and you'd be, that's that guy. The Camembert Quartet, that's that guy. He did the Celtic Tiger show. You'd know him, his face from everywhere. You'd also know him from social media. But as I said, he was one of our very earliest guests, and I think we did have earphones and an iPad, Paddy, at the time.
You did, yeah. And the great thing is that Zoom is no improvement. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, we're going backwards now. First of all, Paddy, thanks for joining us. But it is fair to say you were doing a lot of one-man shows, and you were actually getting a lot of traction. For what it's worth, Lorcan Serve, this parish, had been to one of your ones just before things went to shit, as we say, and was saying it was a great night. What was that experience like, seeing things start to take off and then have it all taken away?
It was appalling. Lorcan was at one of my shows because, amazingly, the main show I was doing is The Ten Dark Secrets of 1798. So it's basically telling the story of our founders, the founders of Irish Republicanism, Wolfe Tone, Lord Edward Fitzgerald, all the rest of it, you know? And it's just a story many people don't know. We might know the names, but so I explored it. Then I explored the kind of the secrets within and the myths and the things that historians have lied to us about and all the rest. So it's great crack, you know. The fake news of the time as well. There's loads of fake news. And so the show was going great. It was getting great audiences. I launched it in 2018. And then, you know, by February of 2020, I did something like 20 gigs in February alone. I sold out Limerick, Derry. I was going all over the place. There was a huge burgeoning interest in just going to see history. It's live historical entertainment. So I'd sing songs. I'd dress up in Henry McCracken's gear, you know, and it was kind of a theatrical show, but with loads of visuals, bring people right back to that time. It was great fun. And then my last show was March the 7th in Derry. And my next show was to be March the 13th in Gortahork in Donegal. And that's when everything stopped. And since then, I've lost 150 gigs.
Wow, that's a lot to lose, Paddy.
Yeah, and that's with the band, that's with my solo stuff. And that's kind of, like, it's the most successful month ever was February 2020, and then everything just ground to an absolute halt. So it's been terrible. I mean, like you, Martin, I get up early in the morning, you know, I was never a get up at the crack of noon person, you know. That's the doll. That's the doll. We're the ones to get up early in the morning. And I was working really hard. I had 10 different jobs effectively, except all 10 of those jobs are now gone. Voiceovers, theatrical production. There is a bit of voiceover work going on, but hilariously on Facebook, there's all these ads now with never pay for a human voiceover ever again. We have a new machine. You just type in the text and your voiceover comes out like this. And you're there going, lads, timing is so off here. This is bad timing. In the middle of COVID, when half the country's been made unemployed, you're telling us about automation. You know, lay off the robots for a while until this is over. Then you can steal our jobs legitimately.
It's like, and that's true. I'd forgotten how busy a man you were. you were always doing like multiple things. Like there'd be bloody gigs in town, after show parties, and Paddy, you'd be running from one thing to do the next thing. And this was the way you lived, and you were always in the car going between places, and you were doing all that. And then the Taoiseach got to his feet and said, "It's all over." And when he took it away, the arts plummeted. How have you found the response in terms of supports and in terms of supports and also the financial supports and the idea then that the state rolled in behind sectors to help them?
Well, I'll start with the positives, right? Because, it's easy to give out about Pascal or Fine Gael or any of the rest of that stuff. But, it's kind of an ironic thing that when the chips were down, the first thing they had to do is go to socialism, which is they had to pay everybody the PUP, which is a pandemic unemployment payment. And that's fair enough. And remember, it started off as 203, I think. And then they realized that there was a lot of people who I call bag of Sanders, people who have to earn a grand a week or something like that. You know what I mean? And they had to pay them 350, right? But now, 12 months later, the people who were, had very successful businesses like me, paid a lot of suppliers, did a lot of work, a lot of gigs, paid a lot of VAT, paid a lot of tax, and were trying to survive on 350 euros. It's absolutely impossible. So it was a very positive initial step, to instantly support people, and it was fair. And the mortgage payment breaks were brilliant because for 6 months, they just told everyone, your loans, your mortgages, the government here are ordering the banks. Mm. And when it's a government sanctioned, as you know, Tony, when it's a government sanctioned payment break, it doesn't affect your credit rating. The bank effectively can give you a break on your mortgage for 3 to 6 months, but it doesn't affect your credit rating. When your credit rating is affected, you can't get a loan or anything else for 4 years. So effectively, when on September the 30th, the payment breaks ended, everybody was flung back onto just living on the pandemic unemployment payment of 350 and still having to pay whopping Celtic Tiger mortgages or otherwise or rents or anything else or loans. And if you were to go and do what Brian Hayes asked you to do, which is make a separate payment, make your deal with the bank and chat to the bank, communicate with the bank. The problem is you could communicate, but it would instantly affect your credit rating.
Immediately on a credit rating, they put OR on it as a trigger to show that it's been restructured. And that's a flag immediately, all of these things.
So when this is over, Tony, the one thing that businesses like mine, which are mobile businesses, right? We don't have a rateable premises or anything like that. And of course, the government brought in these schemes like the CRSS, right? And the CBAS. And long story short, they're effectively support schemes. Pubs can avail of them. Rateable premises can avail of them. Some places can get up to $5,000 a week, right, to support them at this time because they were earning a certain amount of money. But it's only based on rateable premises, which I thought, and I've been campaigning on this, I just thought that's such a 20th century idea of a business because most of us live in the gig economy now and our businesses are mobile. We move from place to place. I play in 200 premises a year, let's say, but I don't have a rateable premises I pay rates on. So I can't avail of anything. So there's a coterie of people in this country who have been absolutely wiped out business-wise. And it's even guys who rent out, let's say, warehouse premises. So the guy they're renting off pays the rates on that. He gets the benefit and the rent. And the guy renting the premises, which might cost thousands a week, is getting 350 a week. So I'm not giving out about the politicians because, look, it's pointless. The thing that you would say to them is, you need to understand that the world of work has changed for a huge amount of people. You can't just base it on this old-fashioned idea that I own a shop and I sell goods out of the shop and the people come into the shop. That's 1952, okay? And I'm amazed because I do a gig every year. It's the Civil Service Awards. Pascal Donoghue hands out the awards, and I always great crack with him because he's actually a very cultural guy. He's big into music. He loves kind of indie bands, and he's big into books and stuff like this. So I can't understand why he doesn't understand how the music business works. It was even a funny incident. I knew he was into music because I don't know if you saw this thing where Hazel Chew was down in the harbour and next door was Eamon Ryan and Pascal was there. Some fellow walked behind the PA system and the PA system crash onto the ground, right?
Oh, that was me. I set that whole thing up.
Great work. But all I knew is poor Eamon Ryan was standing there twiddling his thumbs like a massive piece of equipment had just crashed onto the ground, right? And Pascal's first instinct was to lean over and actually pick it up. So I reckon he must know Giggers, because only Giggers would know immediately you've got to get the PA up off the ground. Eamon was dreaming of salads, you know?
He was oblivious, which was brilliant in that clip. He actually looked like he didn't realise what had just happened. And I was going to... Well, you could say his life flashed before his eyes and there wasn't much to see. And,
I like it. No, look, I've plenty of time for that. But, you know, it just... How can I put it? The emphasis, let's say, for Pascal was on picking up the PA. So I thought to myself, this guy, he's into music, he's into the arts, he's into that stuff. So why the hell doesn't he understand why people like me not getting the CRSS or the CBAS, that you're going to throw us into bankruptcy, like literally into penury. And there's thousands of us out there, musicians who work, you know, 200 gigs a year, any kind of arts who works 200 gigs a year. And the problem is, they don't understand this, and I've been telling them to try and tell the banks, you know, to do so. Catherine Martin's been great. She's been getting, like, grants out and stuff like that, but we need a non-competitive thing that helps businesses like mine, not one where we're all kind of, there's someone grushy stuff up in the air. You might remember that Northside word, Tony, and you grushy a bit of money up in the air, and we all have to catch whatever we can, like the grant system. It just doesn't work. You know what I mean?
There is a war over where it's gushy or grushy. So I'm not. I don't want to open it. It's like coddle Twitter. You get into a war with people, nonetheless.
Martin, well, I went to Mount Temple, so I could have a very odd. I could have a very odd take on the pronunciation there. From
did you go to Mount Temple?
I did. Yeah.
I didn't know that you'd gone to Mount Temple. I had quite a few pals went there. They were quite an affluent set, Paddy. Very affluent set.
I was a very mixed school, very mixed background.
Oh, yeah, that's what everybody who goes there says, everybody.
But I mean, no wonder I got into the United Irishmen, because I was surrounded by Protestants, Catholics and dissenters. So it was great.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
That's how everybody should go to school, by the way, in the North as well. So, the reason I am a Republican is because, you know.
You went to Mount Temple.
But Mount Temple, it was kind of Wolfstone's dream, you know.
Yeah,
but Paddy, it seems that the supports that the government have put in place are geared towards, we'll say, property owning entertainment. Would that be a fair summation of it? In that you have to have a bit of property attached to your arse before you're getting any real support from the government.
It's a business owned property. It would be commercial properties, things like that. Certain companies, you know what I mean? Let's say I know some performers who have large companies because they're very successful and they're very big, and they were able to avail of it too. But then other big companies I know who again, as I say, are renting from people, can't get anything. So if I see a business that's, you know, that would normally turn over 500 grand a year, some of them, and they're trying to live on 350, it's just a week. It just makes no sense, and it's just not taking into account how those people are living. And the problem is, we all thought this would be over in September, right, of 2020. Remember, we were all thinking, the gigs would be back in 2020, right? And so the bank, the mortgage moratorium stopped on the 30th of September. On the 2nd of December, the ECB actually turned around and said to Ireland, you can now reinstate mortgage breaks. This is much more serious than we thought. And we turned them down. So
we spoke to Joe Pino in Portugal, and they had a different tack with the banks. Their prime minister came out and just basically blackmailed the banks publicly. And they didn't do mortgage holidays. They did genuine mortgage and loan breaks, which took weight off people. And has kept...
They kicked out the end of April of 2021 immediately. They haven't made a call on what's happening next, because they're also going through their third wave, and it's pretty rough there as well. But nonetheless, they did do one thing that was different to what... And again, this is not to personalise it, but Pascal Donoghue asked the banks. He wanted to talk to the banks, and then they came away and said, now you, as you quite rightly said, Brian Hayes said, come in and talk to your bank then. as opposed to what they actually did, is they said, well, we bailed you out, now it's time for you to bail us out, is it what was said in Portugal. Now, that is a difference in ideology, Paddy. That's a difference in leadership. You know, there is a reason why there's a left-leaning government in Portugal, and we have got a different type of mentality. We still have, like, we're in a position where we're still going to have to put, it looks like, at least 650 million more into permanent TSB at the moment, you know, just to shore things up. And if we're doing that, and we still, and we own over 70% of it, it just makes no sense that we can't say to them, oh, by the way, for one more quarter, suspend all payments, you know?
Exactly. And here's the other thing. The reason I was saying, like, give large businesses a grand a week. And I know, like, I've got into a couple of, not spats, but just people saying, well, should we all deserve more than 350 then? And I'm here going, well, it would kind of have to be on the basis of, like, who runs a business with huge expenses and costs. That's it kind of has to be on that level, if you know what I mean. And I'm not trying to divide people against each other or any of that old stuff. But there are, you know, let's say there are people who take on the boat share of business expenses within an organization, and they need to be helped out. For instance, if the government were to pay a bit, almost like the HAP scheme, you know, with rental, if the government were to pay the people what they actually earned before for the 12 months, right? We'd all just pay the mortgage and pay all the bills, and all that money goes straight back out again, plus the big tax and the big VAT that the government gets as well. So there's a kind of a return, a bit like HAP. You know, HAP seems to be a loser until it gets into the hand of the landlord, who then hands it right back to the government. That's why the government loves it. So,
well, not all of the HAP landlords hand it back to the government. A lot of HAP recipients are residential investment trusts, but that's probably a debate for another day.
Well, I'm not debating at all. I'm just picking it as, let's say, an example of
the money, the circular economy. It absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, you put it in to get it back out. The problem is, if you put me into bankruptcy, if you put me into penury, then you're going to get nothing, and then it's. You know, you've made thousands upon thousands of people in the country unable to actually do anything. And I just think if we were meant to freeze everything, remember we were meant to freeze the economy. We were talking about that. Okay, so you have to freeze it then for as long as it's frozen. You know, you can't start, you know, taking dinners out saying I'll be cooking these at 6 months' time when they're rotting on the kitchen dashboard, or whatever stupid analogy I'm trying to make that makes absolutely no sense, Martin.
Well, I'm just going to move us on a bit, Paddy, and I'm going to bastardize a song just to make it happen. We don't know where we're going, but we know where we've been. So what does the future hold for us, Paddy? Are you going back to live gigs at some stage? Will we ever get to interview somebody in person again? Where are you on the scale? Totally pessimistic, or are we starting up next week?
I'm very, very pessimistic. And you know, and I don't mean to look, I tried to do gigs over the period, right? So let's say in last August, Burr Theatre, like, some people have been incredible and supportive throughout this, about five of them, but they've been incredible throughout this. And Burr Theatre, for instance, said, we're going to put on your show. It's a 200 seater, but we'll put 30 people in there. I didn't have the heart to tell them that's about as many people as I probably get to the show anyway. I'm joking. But so they were doing everything in their power, right? August 15, 2020, we're going to have people sitting seven seats apart. They're going to be wearing masks. There's going to be no break. You better shorten that show, remove three of the dark secrets, so the show's only an hour, so they don't even meet in the toilet to get COVID off each other, right? And then two nights later on the news, Micheál Martin says, I'm shutting down Offaly, Kildare and Laois. I mean, I've just had incredibly bad luck. It's almost like COVID's been following me around and everything's been cancelled. We did one brilliant gig in Waterford, socially distanced, in September. It worked a treat. It was great. It was filmed and all of that. But since that, very little, some online work. And what I'm really worried about is that it's not so much that when we come back, but people are always saying this hilarious thing to me and to all musicians and artists. You're wrong, by the way, if you're saying this to people. You're going to be twice as busy when it gets back. You'll be twice as big. You'll be out the door with gigs. You'll be gigging from Monday to Friday to Saturday to Sunday. Like, there won't be, you won't have a night off. That's not how it's going to work, because the gigs that were cancelled, and everybody wants to have their gigs on a Thursday or a Friday or a Saturday. So there's going to be this horrendous Thunderdome-like war within the arts, bands undercutting each other viciously to get gigs off other bands. I'm sorry to be so pessimistic. And it's going to be really tough. Pubs are going to have very little money to actually pay for entertainment. And the one thing I'm really worried about is that we've institutionalized people. We've actually taught people to sit in on a Friday night and drink below cost wine and watch terrible, terrible programming on Netflix. So where you can actually see the storylines being dragged out so they can get more episode out of their series.
You should have paused when you were saying that just to give the emphasis, you know.
Well, you know what I mean? I really think this is what I'm worried about. I'm worried that we're institutionalizing people on two levels, that we're making automation okay, that I'm seeing ads for like automated voiceovers, automated this, automated that, that are literally wanting to crush the arts, no problem. I mean, if they brought in robot musicians tomorrow, you know, there'd be a robot wedding band on the road. Do you know what I mean? And like, I might get the guitarist robot just so I could turn it up and down. But they're always too loud on stage. But what I'm just saying is, that I'm worried that they've institutionalized people. You know, this was happening with X Factor and it was happening with all sorts of things for years. But I just don't want it to be like people are too scared to go out. They're too scared to leave the house and all of that. But, you know, other people think there's going to be some mad rush to the pubs. I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure it's...
I think it'll be a mix. I think there's definitely impacts on like I can only talk about myself personally, but I'm at the supermarket at 8 a.m. when it opens because I don't want to be there when other people are around, you know. And that's become something now that I realize I have to do. So I don't know what will happen if someone said to me, you know, you wouldn't nip up to the shops then, even though we've all received the vaccine and it's 2023. Can I go back to something you said earlier though, in terms of Catherine Martin and the idea of so we know she's talked about it implementing a universal basic income, but obviously it's not universal because it's not going to everybody. But for the arts, this is the thing. Now, have you any thoughts on that as at least a mechanism to improve things?
It's very hard because it's kind of like an ace donna for all. But look, all I know is that the solution has to be all encompassing. It has to be non-competitive. Universal basic income is something that's coming for all of us. Like I say, with automation, it's something that's coming down the road. I was very interested in Andrew Yang's proposals in America, but nobody wanted to listen to him. And you're kind of there going, like, if I'm seeing these ads coming along, if I'm seeing, and if they're taking the value of music and putting it on Spotify, and someone like Peter Frampton can turn around and said, I got 50 million plays of Baby, I Love Your Way, and I got a $1,700 check. There's something wrong. You know, we've almost like automated creativity to the point where people expect it to be free. And that's a real issue. You know what I mean? And expecting the world to catch up and go, oh, yeah, you know, that's a good idea. I will go on Patreon and pay for this rather than just listen to it for free. It's very hard to convince people to do that.
You know, I try world.
I try throughout the year. I did a thing called Professor Patrick. So I have a Patreon for that. I will be starting a kind of a music podcast. Don't mean to compete with you guys, but don't worry, everyone is podcasting now, but you know, you guys were first. Just remember that. Okay. You know, you didn't even have the gear. They didn't even have the gear for podcasting when you started a podcast.
No, it was just called Three Lads in a Room.
That's it, basically. Yeah. But on practically a Walkman. But the main thing is that, my worry is that it's a bit like when they propose, you know, green energy. You know, green energy is going to take over. You know, we're going to have electric cars for everyone. And I'm a gigger and I'm going, okay, does the electric car charge in 20 minutes? No, it takes 5 hours. Does it go over 100 kilometers because I've got a gig in Killarney? No, it only does 100 kilometers on one charge. And you better not charge your phone or it'll only go 50 kilometers. I can't change technology as fast as it's going. Do you know what I mean? We can't. And if that car isn't $7,000, what's the point? It's only for rich people. So all of this stuff is only for rich people. And again, we're seeing the world of the arts being, again, only for rich people, as in I have the money to actually go out and, you know, do stuff for free and give away my music for free. But none of the rest of us do. Like, I'm recording one song at the moment and it's taking ages because, you know, you have to do almost everything yourself. And when you're doing absolutely everything yourself, it's really tough, you know.
We spoke to a chap from a place called Cork a while back, and he was telling us the same kind of stuff. that if you are an opera singer or you're involved in opera or theatre, that their supports are more weighted towards those people. But if you're somebody who does sketches, does stand-up, that's kind of seen as a part-time gig. It's not seen as something that should be taking you in a living.
He made the point about comedy being looked upon as the poor relation. Well, people in comedy were taught that you must have a side gig. What do you do? Well, I'm a comedian. No, but what do you do for the day job? Kind of was the second question that he said would often fall. And that's Tyke Hickey. So we're not talking out of school here. But
Tyke is my pal. But look, I agree. I don't like the snobbery within the art, especially with comedy. Look, some of the greatest movies ever made of the last 50 years. Blazing Saddles, Elf. Do you think they'll ever end up on a top 100 Guardian best films of whatever list? No, it's always French stuff that no one can actually sit through. Sorry. And it just annoys me how comedy is treated. You know, I was in the comedy game myself, and I know what Tyke means. Like, it is an art. Now, I would put an addendum there that anybody who comes on stage and the first thing they say is, so where are you from? And they go through the audience and ask them where they're from. They are not allowed any money. They're not allowed any money. But if they come on and perform written material that they have come up with themselves and the room is laughing, I think they deserve everything they get. I Tyke is a genius, and you're kind of there going, like, you know, this needs, as well as that, you know, dare I say it, there's an awful lot of great art out there and great work being done, right? And we're not seeing it reflected on our TV. You know, we're not seeing it reflected in a lot of different places, at radio and TV. And that needs to happen, because I always laugh at how the arts is kind of, there's plenty of music shows over the kind of Christmas and RT and stuff like that. But then it kind of just stopped, you know, like there was, and it's almost like the orchestra was on one day on a Sunday and I loved it. Like, they were putting on the orchestra on Sunday, I think, on BBC or RT1. It's like 9 o'clock in the morning till 10. That should happen every Saturday or Sunday. It shouldn't just be, oh, we did four of these, now that's done. Like, our culture is what people like about Ireland. They don't come here for the banking. Well, some do, but you know what I mean? Mm. Most people like Ireland for the culture, for the laughs, you know, for the humor. Like, and we're like, you know, I'm seeing it all for free online. I need to be seeing it being paid for and reflected out
there. Yeah, no, there has been some great creativity, and some of that was bubbling under the surface, and some people have, again, you like, it's, I think if we take someone like Michael Fry and talk about some of the sketches that he's done, like, he has done things that have over 1.5 million views. And he's not paid for that. It goes no, you know what I mean? He's trying to do a little bit of work where he's maybe, and he set up a Ko-fi where people can pay him the price of a cup of coffee to do it. And it's, you know.
Let me give you an example. So I did a techno track called COVID Loves to Party.
Yeah.
Based on Derek Leary, who's a lovely man, a great supporter of 1798 in Mayo. He's a really good guy, but he did come out with the words COVID Loves to Party. So I turned into a techno track, right? And you may have heard it. It went everywhere. It got 250,000 views, I think, on Twitter. And it traveled everywhere. It was on WhatsApp and all like that. So I put it on Bandcamp and I said, okay, let's try and make some money out of these 250,000 views. And I made 168 euro. But I said this to a music manager I know. And he says, that's good. That's really good. And I was there going, so 250,000 people have seen a song. If you sold a song or even got a cent for a song, you know, in the 1990s, you'd be able to actually make albums and have a music career. But I get 168 euros. So it's quite amazing. I remember talking, I was recording with Ronan Hardiman actually ages ago, and you know, the other musicians in the room, we were discussing, how did the internet steal a march on one of the greatest money-making schemes in the world, which is the music business? I mean, it is one of the great, some of the greatest, I don't know, crimos ever were running the music business in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and yet the internet stumped them somehow.
There is a whole chapter on it in the book Surveillance Capitalism, and I think they refer to it as the Apple miracle. It's about the iPod, not the iPhone, the iPod, and how it essentially completely it became the piece, not the actual not the actual creator, the talent, the music, all of that. It became this thing, and it, how it then divested from that. And it's you, I don't know if you've read it, but it certainly does show how it in the space of, I think it's like 28 months, it just took over the world. And in effect, that's what we've been seeing now. You see the likes of Spotify, as you refer to, paying people a tiny fraction for, you know, and then you have, and then you see them put up, oh, and by the way, if you like this artist, maybe pay them a little donation here, because we've added a donation button on Spotify, but we're not paying them.
Well, that's why I did the thing on Bandcamp, because they are the fairest. It's amazing. But it's just very bleak for musicians at the moment. And I think if we're training people, you know, to, you know, sit at home and I suppose, you know, pay for Disney Plus and pay for Netflix and pay for Amazon Prime, We have to be able to pay people for one off things. So that's why I'm doing an event myself on March the 12th. Sorry, lad.
I was just going to come. You haven't been sitting still for 12 months, Paddy, and that's where I was going to come in. I presume you've been working your ass off this last 12 months.
Well, yes, I set up an Indiegogo to write the book of my show, and the 10 Dark Secrets of 1798. It's turned into something else, with apologies to my funders, who will be getting a book ASAP, don't you worry. But after all my complaining, I have a show to plug. I'm going to be doing an online show on Friday, the 19th of March at 8 p.m. called The Murder of Wolf Tone. So I'm reopening the cold case file. Did Wolf Tone commit suicide? Did something much darker happen? What's the evidence? Who was involved? What was the fake news at the time? So it's going to be, you know, kind of a live online show with songs and, you know, hundreds of images. And it's going to be like one of my live shows. So go to paddycullivan.com. Tickets are €10. And on the day of performance, I'll send you a code and then you can watch the show online at home. So go to paddycullivan.com, Friday, 19th of March, 8 p.m., The Murder of Wolf Tone. If it succeeds, I might do it once a month and be able to reveal the 10 dark secrets that way while getting the book out. When I get the book back from China, although, no, I'm determined to print the book in Ireland, obviously. But have you seen the difference in prices between?
Yeah,
I have. Actually, it's just such a coincidence. We were discussing this week. Both Tony and I have written books. So,
stop, would you?
You know, it's now nobody's bought them.
Hang on. I made $63 on mine. But the line, actually, I'm going to give him credit, Paddy. He came up with the best line. There was a group chat with other guys from the Tortoise Shack. And someone said, I don't believe Tony actually wrote a book. And I said, I did. And so, and they said, what is it? And Martin said, the Da Vinci Coddle. And I I like it. And now I want to write the Da Vinci Coddle. Like, that's just it. Like, you know,
what was the book on how to win the lotto? What was that?
Oh, no.
No, it was that kind of Da Vinci intrigue. And it was the main character was a fella called Hom Tanks. So
I love that. You have not been idle as well, Martin. The creativity is bursting out of you there. You see, this is the thing. But this is the funny thing. Like, the more and more, I suppose, how could I put it? You'd think that the problem is there's so many conspiracy theories at the moment. Do you know what I mean? That there's two types of conspiracy theory. There's two types. One is the crazy, ridiculous one that everyone who doesn't believe in conspiracy theories points at to say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. Don't believe it. It's ridiculous. And of course, it's ridiculous. But then there's the actual ones, like the murder of Wolf Tone. Was it murder or suicide? And I really enjoy that stuff and kind of like going back into a period of time and actually finding all the characters that were around, finding the letters of the time, finding the stuff that doesn't add up. The worst thing about that time was the newspapers. The lies coming out of them were so ridiculous. You'd think it was 2020.
Yeah, we walked into that one, didn't we?
Sorry, I'm only kidding.
We will, but no, like, I mean, first of all, people should go along and support these type of things. Go to the shows. I mean, our listeners, we do a show on Sunday with people, and as in other hosts off other podcasts, we get together and we do a live audience, and it's great crack. It genuinely, like, this Sunday will be our 30th, Paddy. And, you know, it's sort of thing that you didn't think, we didn't have a clue whether there was an audience for it. And, you know, and it's not easy to do it online. And it's certainly not. And people think it's, you know, cheap as chips. It's not either. You know what I mean? There's a lot of time, a lot of effort goes into it. And bloody Zoom take a few bob off you as well. I mean, I think they wanted an extra £300, Martin, a few weeks ago when we did the CETA one, wasn't it? It was
they were talking about a premium for doing that kind
of
online.
Because we once you go to sort of 500 guests, they charge even more. So there was all sorts of stuff that you get hit with it, but
Tony, they have to pay the staff to sweep out the internet, you know?
Yeah.
Toilets. and to pay for the bar staff and all on the internet. I mean,
where does one get tickets for your show, Paddy?
You just go to paddycullivan.com. I have it up there, and just click on the tickets, buy the ticket, and then you will get a link for March the 12th, and you can watch it online at 8 p.m. So I'm trying to make it as much of a live event as possible and have a bit of a Q&A afterwards. Possibly on Facebook or on YouTube or something like that, or head over to Facebook. As you say, both of you, people think this is easy, but it's 10 times the work. Do you know what I mean? Because you're actually doing all the work. You know, having worked in TV studios, you see the amount of crew that there is. You see the amount of people that there is to actually do something. And it's great and all, but people just need to be aware that this costs money and all of this. And I don't know. That's why I kind of appeal to the government as well. I think Catherine Martin's idea is a good one as well, because, you know, the impression of artists or people in the arts or people doing anything that's in any way creative or outside the bounds of the regular job, that idea that somehow they're lazy or something. I've never seen people that work as hard. I mean, as to paraphrase Leo, or as you were saying, Martin, you know, not only do we get up early in the morning, we go to bed early in the morning.
Yeah, it's a 24/7 kind of stuff. Will you survive, Paddy? Will you come back out of this? Will you do great big stage shows again in the future? Are you looking forward to it? Or do you, I mean, you've said you're pessimistic, and you are actually quite pessimistic about the future. So where's the arts going?
Well, I was talking to my friend John the other day about the Dublin Bowie Festival, which was on in January, right? And they did it all online. And my friend Shobzy did this incredible thing where he sang the entire Hunky Dory album. And this is where I got the idea, where people paid and they watched it. And we just said afterwards, look, you'll never have the feeling of being in a live room watching musicians again. But what you do have alongside this festival are these amazing interviews with Tony Visconti, Rick Wakeman, this live thing done in a house by Shobzy, these beautiful scene set and everything like that. So I think the future is going to be a hybrid of online and live, as in people can engage with the festival or engage with you musically all over the world. And then the people attending obviously are the ones who get to go and actually enjoy it. This idea that stuff will go back strictly to live and it will never be online again, I don't know if that's going to happen. I think people will now expect, again, they're almost kind of institutionalized into thinking there's going to be some kind of online activity going on as well. Imagine Festival in Belfast did it. I managed to do a gig with them. So look, I want to go back to the stages and stuff like that, but I have to kind of bet everything on the internet right now, because I'll be honest, I did the sums, I did the sums in my head, and at 150,000 vaccines, we're looking at 2022 before anything happens. Or at least, you know, if we were going by what Micheál Martin said the other night, it's 2 weeks into August by the time everybody gets their second vaccine, and that's 3 million people, which is about 70% herd immunity. Mm-hmm. And that's so September we're looking at. So it's very, very frightening. It's really frightening. I know a lot of people are completely on the edge now, and I really worry about them. And I just, and myself obviously, and it's like being, you know, standing over a precipice the whole time. Do you know what I mean? And someone's just tipping you like that the whole time, just tipping. I go on, you know. And it really isn't. It's not helpful. And I think the government, for their own sake, they need to help those people out, because the arts, whatever about them, and you might think they all vote Sinn Féin and they'll never give Fianna Fáil a vote. They might give you a number three, though.
Mm-hmm. You know? I would be thinking, actually, the government need the cultural capital more than ever.
Yeah, I think so too. And they really do. And I mean, Charlie Haughey's great trick, I think, was to actually not silence the artists, but he certainly... he put arts at the forefront. He set up Ace Donagh. He brought in the artists exemption tax. He did a lot of things like that, that, you know, it showed that you were valued. And look, none of this, by the way, I can't stand this soppy attitude that a lot of people have been talking about this, you know, broadcasting about the arts. Like, it's our passion, you know, and it's our vocation, and it's something we basically do for free. And I was quite annoyed at the start of this whole thing when people were doing 2-hour gigs on Facebook, and I was sitting there going, you're giving away everything for free, man. Like, don't be giving away your talent for free. I know you love it and you have an audience and you want to, you know, even for musicians especially, a lot of it's about practice and keeping your chops. You know, you get rusty and all of this type of thing. But I think people then got used to, oh, this is for free, this is for free. And you're selling yourself short, I believe. So, I think this wishy-washy idea about the arts, I get into the arts to make money, okay? It's what I'm good at. And we have plenty of examples, the best being Rod Stewart, of how it can work out for you. let's please stop talking about the arts as some kind of wishy-washy thing that we're all happy for a few crumbs from the table. We're here to make money. I was doing, you know, we were doing well. We, you know, 200 gigs a year is nothing to be sneezed at. A lot of suppliers getting paid, a lot of people working together, a lot of money being made in the country out of the music biz and out of general events. Events were huge, award ceremonies. That was our big thing. So, you know, this idea that somehow, you know, Asher, you'd be grand now. You just hang out there, play in your garret. And when this is all over, you can creep down and, you know, you'll be grand. We won't be grand.
Paddy, it's always
a grand a week. That's what I need. A grand.
It's always a pleasure to chat with you. And it is always a pleasure to chat with you, Paddy. You are, and we were discussing this before you came on air, you're one of the hardest working entertainers that Tony and I have ever come across. You are never, ever stop. You're always doing something. So, yeah, we think you're worth a grand a week, maybe even 1,200 a week. We've discussed this. Nice. So we'd be all on for giving you a grand a week. Thank you for coming in and talking to us on the Tortoise Shack. We'll put a link up to your show on this. And we'd just like to remind patrons, yeah, we like to get paid for what we do because it costs us for what we do. So put your hand in your pocket, patreon.com/Tortoise Shack, and come on board as part of the family.
It's the emotional cost too, Martin. You know, it's the emotional cost.
Like, if only this was video, we could see the eyes. those puppy eyes he's giving you now, folks. Honestly, you just send them all your money. Whatever you have, send them your money.
Yeah, you've turned into my Bob Geldof avatar.
Give us your money. No.
Listen, by the way, lads, you know, when I talk like this, like some kind of capitalist maniac, I want this for everybody. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's the old socialist trope. I want everyone to get a grand a week. Everyone, you know, because yeah, that's actually what it takes to live in this.
Well, Martin's right. We're delighted to have caught up with you, but I also do think it's an important message that whereby, you look at the actual individual, and not everything fits into this PUP model. Not everything fits into this. Everybody's circumstances are different, and I don't understand why. As we pointed out, and just to finish on this, the state didn't realize that if they'd gone another 2% in the budget, we could have covered everybody up until the end of April, and we wouldn't have had this heartache, this you standing on the precipice, as you so well put it. And I think that's important, because we tried to do COVID on the cheap, and yet where I see today, again, not to personalize it, but I see the Taoiseach on a conference call talking about availing of the European Recovery Fund, which Ireland can't really avail of because our GDP is skewed by the fact that our tax system is still pumping in the money. So, So Europe says everything is fine with you guys. And yet we know on the ground, people like yourself, it's not fine at all. Actually, it's really, really tenuous right now. And that doesn't break true enough.
And it's about buy-in, Tony. It's about buy-in. So the whole country did buy into this. You know what I mean? And if you want them to buy in to the we're all in it together thing and all the rest of it, you really do have to make sure that everyone is all in it together. And I really don't understand the stopping of the payment breaks with the mortgages. There are people in Hamburg I've heard of who have mortgage breaks till 2022. And that's just the German government being logical. They're just being logical and saying, look, this isn't going to end until whenever. And you have to also trust in people. You know, you have to trust that there's a lot of people out there. I'm always amazed that there's kind of this coterie in Ireland that thinks, oh, there's people out there who don't want to work. I don't know anybody who doesn't want to work. Everybody I know wants to work and actually wants to do well. It's when you're forced into a situation of neither doing well, not being ordered not to work. Ordered not to work is the most incredible thing that's ever happened to me in my life. As a workaholic, it drives me crazy. And that's what leads people to despair and immobility and inertia. Where the working population of this country becomes almost as inert as its government.
We will leave it there, Paddy. The link will be in the podcast. You can just look at the blurb, guys. Push it with your finger, and it'll bring you to Paddy's website, and you might buy a ticket because it'll be well worth it. Talk to y'all soon. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on